Welcome to the Atomic Podcast. Whether you're a nurse anesthesia resident in CRNA school or an RN trying to get there, you're in the right place.
I'm Sachi, and along with Rhea, we're going to talk all things anesthesia and science, and we're going to bring along some of our friends too.
Join us each week as we dive into all things science and anesthesia. Welcome to another episode of the Atomic Anesthesia Podcast. Now, typically for Atomic Anesthesia, we like to focus on the science and anesthesia content. But of course, we get tons of questions from residents about graduate student life. How do I survive in graduate school? All sorts of questions that we have some experience answering, and sometimes we bring guests on that have experience answering too. And a question that we get a lot is, how do I survive in grad school as a parent? Or maybe even you're thinking about going to graduate school, but you're at a point in your life where you're also thinking about starting a family. Is it possible to go to a very rigorous program like an anesthesia program and have children at the same time? Is it possible to survive in an anesthesia program while having young children? So I wanted to invite my very good friend, Samantha Simmons, who also was a resident of mine several years ago at Drexel University, now a flourishing CRNA.
I'm honored to be here tonight and to talk to you guys. And I hope I can encourage you to make the decision to go back to CRNA school, even if you're thinking about starting a family or if you already have a family.
Awesome. So Sam, can you tell us a little bit about your background?
Sure. So I graduated from the University of Maryland School of Nursing back in 2015. I fell in love with pediatric nursing. So I took my first job in the neonatal ICU at Hopkins. I was there for about 3 years and I was working one night shift with a nurse whose sister had just graduated from CRNA school. She was talking about how much she loved it. So I decided to spend some shadow time with her, and I also fell in love with it and decided to pursue CRNA school. So initially I applied to the University of Maryland with just my NICU experience, but I met with the director after I wasn't accepted the first year, and he recommended that I work in an adult just so I can make myself a more competitive applicant. So that's what I did. I went to the cardiovascular surgery ICU, also at Hopkins. I worked there for about a year before I applied again. But this time I decided not to put all my eggs in one basket. I applied to the University of Maryland, to Drexel, and also to Georgetown. I was fortunately accepted to all three of them, and I had to make the difficult decision to move away from my family. But I did decide to attend Drexel. They offered me an earlier start date, and ultimately I was just excited to get started and meet my goal of becoming a CRNA. So when I graduated in May of 2022, I took my first job at Hopkins, and I've been there for about 2 years. I recently, last month, started a new job in Annapolis at Anne Arundel, but I kept a per diem job at Hopkins so I can, you know, continue to do the higher acuity patients and cases.
When you say you left your family to go to CRNA school at
yes.
that time.
And what children. I mean by when I say I left my family, my whole family lives here in Maryland. So I made the difficult decision to move away from like my support system, you know, the people who helped me care for my son at the time. Mm-hmm. So at that time, my son was 2 years old.
And then you and your son and your partner
Correct.
Moved to Philadelphia for you to attend Drexel. Gotcha. And so that's an experience that not a lot of people have in CRNA school, because a lot of people that go to CRNA school are relatively young. They haven't had children yet. And were you the only person in your class that had children, or were there others?
Yeah,
how was that experience
was
for you?
Pretty heavy with parents. We had one who had four kids, all under the age of 10, I believe. And I remember him being very busy, but you know, he did it. I think we had a couple more that also had kids, and, you know, it was nice to kind of fall back on each other and motivate each other through the program. So that was definitely helpful.
Were you at all worried about applying to school when you had a child, or did that not faze you and you were like, I'm going, this is what I'm going to do and I'm going no matter what? Like, what was your thought process when you were starting to graduate?
I'm sure part of me was worried, but I think the majority of me was just excited. You know, after you have kids, life changes and your priorities are very different. And I think I just wanted to give my son and my family the best possible life. So I think overall, I was just excited to start this new chapter and, you know, just ultimately have a great life for my son.
I want to mention that Sam also was pregnant in the program as well. So not only having a young toddler going through the program, but in the last year of the program, when I came on as adjunct when Sam was a senior. So I met her when she was towards the end of the program, and you were pregnant at that time when in your last year. So you were
I think we did have a couple, I think three or four of the girls and some of the guys had wives that were pregnant during the program. So like you touched on at the beginning, you know, a lot of people at this stage in their life are looking forward to starting a family. So, you know, CRNA school doesn't have to mean you can't do that. But I think a lot of us tried to time it so that we had the baby after we graduated, but some of us didn't, and that's okay too. So there's, you know, it's very flexible, and I hope that nobody is discouraged to either start or have a family when they are considering CRNA school.
Right. And so Sam, you know, she has a toddler, she's pregnant in her last year of CRNA school, also super involved in her state association. You had a leadership role in your state association, and Sam had a 4.0 in the program and won the award for like the top student, which was funny how they announced that, because they do you remember this during the graduation dinner? There were several people in her class that had 4.0s. So they had to count the number of A pluses that people had in the program. And Sam had the most amount of A pluses and edged everyone else out. So just, you know, very much a superhuman. I'm sure people are listening to this, be like, who is this even a real person? Yes. So thriving and did really well with children and has lots of tips and tricks to help you be successful as well. So your experience in graduate school, can you just elaborate a little bit more on like what that was like? What was it like to have a toddler and be a parent in graduate school? And
it was definitely challenging. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to say it was easy, but I think CRNA school in and of itself is a challenge. But I tell this to everybody, to all of my classmates. Mm-hmm. I tell this still today to all of my fellow ICU nurses. I firmly believe that having a kid while I was in CRNA school made me more disciplined. You know, it forced me to kind of plan ahead and prioritize my time so that my studying was more efficient. So, you know, after clinical, my classmates and I, we all had a group message, and they would talk about taking naps after clinical. And this, you know, made me jealous. But going home to the nanny, I realized, you know, she was going to finish around 5 o'clock. So I had to use those last couple hours after clinical to get any studying done that I could, because I knew once she left, I would be spending time with my son. Same thing on the weekends, you know, I would organize it with my partner so that, you know, I study better in the morning. So I'd make the plan. I'd block off the morning time for myself, and then we would make plans to spend time together in the afternoon. So I think that was definitely what helped me get through CRNA school with a young kid.
Yeah. So I didn't have children in CRNA school. I was pretty young when I went to school, but I have been in this PhD program now for 5 years, full time, and have two young children as well. So I feel like my experiences are very similar to yours, and being a very, you know, rigorous program. And I feel like the PhD and the CRNA school are totally different, but they have their own demands, right? And I was the same as you. I had to be much more efficient with my time. I can't kind of lollygag all day long and kind of take my time doing my work. You have a block of time that it has to be done.
Right.
And there's just no procrastinating. You get it done, because when you go home, you have your home responsibilities, and your children, especially as you start to get older. And I actually felt like it was easier when my children were younger, because they were kind of in their own little world and they were playing and doing their own thing. But they are getting to be 8 and 9 years old now. And now they notice that, hey, mom spends all her time in her office instead of with us. Why do you have meetings so late at night? So on and so forth. So yeah, I definitely agree with you. You have to be a lot more efficient and disciplined with your time. What are some of the challenges, the big challenges that you had with, you know, just like clinicals and a lot of the demands that you have? You know, CRNA school isn't the most flexible graduate program to attend, right? You have like your clinical rotations that are pretty you know, you have to go to a certain site. It might be a certain distance away. How do you, what are some of those challenges that you face?
Definitely the clinical aspect of CRNA school takes up majority of your time, especially after the first few months of the program. And I certainly think it depends on the program. I was fortunate that Drexel assigned me to a total of 2 clinical sites, and both of them were in Delaware. They were only 15 minutes apart. So my family and I made the decision to move to Delaware about 6 months into the program. This made the commute much more manageable. I was spending less time in the car and more time with either studying or with my family. I wasn't waking up quite as early. So I was fortunate in that aspect, but I know a lot of other people in our program struggled because they were assigned to several different clinical sites, and some of them were 2 to 3 hours away. And that meant that, you know, you might have to stay in the hospital housing, and that's challenging when you have kids. So that's definitely one of the more challenging things about CRNA school. But again, going into CRNA school with these expectations that these are going to be a challenge and it's just short term and you got to push through it. And ultimately your goal is to do what's best for your family and your professional life.
When you applied to CRNA school, was this something that you brought up? Like when during your interview?
Honestly,
was this something that came up at all?
Initially, when I had been accepted to Drexel, I moved to Philadelphia, assuming I actually moved to New Jersey. And I was hoping that I would get assigned to Cooper because somebody that I had been connected with during the application process, that's where she went. And that's she also lived in New Jersey. So I think I really didn't know much about this. And I wish I had asked more during the interview. So when I didn't get assigned to Cooper, I'm very fortunate for my experience at Christiana, but we had to relocate and move the family. It worked out in the end for me, but definitely wish I had asked more questions during the interview process.
Yeah. I know that our faculty specifically are very understanding of parents, and that may not be the case for all faculty around the country. And I definitely want to encourage people if they have a family and that is something that they're worried about, that you bring that up right away. And if you have several interviews, you know, when I was applying for a PhD program, that mattered to me. It was, am I going to go to a program that is going to work with me, that I have a family and I maybe sometimes need to leave in an event of an emergency? Or am I going to be with a program that, you know, you want to figure out, are they going to be a red flag or not? And I think when I went through my interview process, that was one of the first things that I asked was, I'm not your typical PhD student. A lot of your students are a little bit younger. I'm a little bit older. I have a family. Is this going to be a problem? And right away they were like, oh my gosh, no, that's, we have people that have families all the time. But if they would have said something like, if they would have hesitated, then I would have definitely ran the other way, because you can't go through such a rigorous program and not have your faculty support you.
You know, looking back, if I had known, I would have been top of my list to ask. But I think at the time I was just eager to start and it ended up working out for the best for me. But if I did have to go back and get my doctorate or my PhD one day, I would definitely have that at the top of my list when it comes to expectations for the program. So I'm glad we're having this conversation now so that people can think about these things when they're applying.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, maybe you'll be back at Drexel again. Yeah. So other things that you struggle with, I could say for certain, one of the things that I struggle with was giving my children my absolute full attention and not thinking and having the hamster wheel go, you know, go off in a million different directions. I certainly struggled with that. Are there things that you can remember that were really,
yes,
really
I think number one, the mom guilt was a big thing that I struggled with. Just kind of like you just touched on, you could never give your kids your full attention during this program, even though that's your intention, but you know, you're always going to be stressed about an upcoming test or, you know, possibly a new clinical rotation. So again, I think just setting the expectation that, hey, during these 2 or 3 years of CRNA school, it's going to be challenging, but in the end, it's going to be worth it. So CRNA school is a big commitment. So I think just setting the expectation that you might miss a few school or sporting events, but again, reminding yourself of all the benefits that are going to come from being a CRNA.
Yeah. I would always tell my children, because they would come up and interrupt during maybe a time period where I'm like, I really need to write this paper right now. I really need to study for this exam. I think one thing that really helped with my children was letting them know that they had a dedicated time during that day that was coming up. So when they knew that, hey, you get my undivided between 6 and 8 o'clock, anything outside of that time period, it's my time and I have to focus right now. And they understood that and they were okay with that. So they knew like, hey, when mom's in the office outside of these times, like we really can't, unless it's an emergency, right, come up there. But they knew that between those times I was theirs. So I think that helps a lot with that attention seeking that they needed sometimes. And certainly the guilt is awful, right? Because you still feel bad because you're like, I wish I could give them everything all the time. But it's part of the sacrifice and the discipline, I think, with being,
yeah, I agree. And that's certainly a question I get from ICU nurses, you know, is it easier for me to do this when they're younger or should I wait for when the kids are older? And I think that both come with their pros and cons. You know, as you said, the older they are, the more they can understand. Yep. You can set, you know, boundaries and a schedule for them for when they can expect to spend time with mom or dad. They're a little bit more independent, but it's also when they're older, they have more extracurricular activities and they also remember this time away from mom. So I think the same with the younger, it has its own pros and cons. They don't understand. They are very reliant on you, but it's before they have too many sporting events. And so again, they both have their pros and cons and you just got to choose what works best for you.
I mean, I've been in this program for 5 years now, so I feel like I started when my daughter was in pre-K and kindergarten, and my son was in kindergarten. So they were kind of coming out of the toddler phase, and then now they're in third and fourth grade. So they're like, oh, they almost feel like they're like preteens at this point. And I would say my own personal experience, I agree with you, they both have their pros and cons. I felt like it was easier when they were younger. I find it to be more difficult now. They are more independent in the morning, like they can make their own breakfast and pick out their own clothes. But then the extracurricular things that they're into now are very demanding. And they fortunately like me and want to spend time with me. And so they demand more of my attention now than they actually did when they were younger.
Yeah, I only have experience with doing it while, you know, my son was young. But if I had to do it all over again, I would probably recommend, if you have the choice to do this while the kids are young.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, right at this moment, my husband is with them at swim lessons and then tomorrow it's tennis and then gymnastics. And then it's my daughter's birthday. So we're having a party for her. And then I have to go to lab because I have lab work to do. So it just gets crazier and crazier. I don't know. That's just my own personal experience.
I know there are some programs, we have students in the Hopkins program that rotate through Johns Hopkins and they actually don't take calls. So I know it's not a requirement for all the programs, but I think it's fairly common throughout most programs. And it was definitely a challenge. I think one, just accepting that you're going to be missing important things like, you know, morning and bedtime routines. This can be stressful for parents and also for the children. You know, they don't understand why mom or dad isn't there to read them a book or, you know, rock them to sleep. So that was a challenge. And I think the other side of things, the other challenge of call shifts is you're just tired. You're exhausted on top of the exhaustion from being in CRNA school. Mm-hmm. You know, this is just another level of tiredness because maybe you have call once or twice a month. So you probably try to maintain a normal sleep schedule. So maybe you're only taking a short nap after clinical so that you can get back on a normal schedule. Or maybe you don't plan childcare for that day because you're like, hey, I'm going to be home. So again, those were definitely challenging shifts to do, but very valuable in your clinical experience.
What was your primary mode of childcare for you and your partner? Did you use daycare?
We ended up getting it because my husband he traveled for work. So most mornings he wasn't home. Yes.
Double whammy.
We made the decision that an au pair would be the safest option because it stressed me out worrying that somebody may not show up in the morning for me to go to clinical or, you know, they're sick. So it added an extra level of security, like security knowing that the au pair was there and sleeping there. So she would always be there in the morning for me. And if my son was sick, she was there.
Is the price comparable to like a nanny or daycare, or so is it I've never used one before.
It depends. I think certainly if you have multiple children, the price is certainly better. But also if your children are young, you know, the infant rates are much higher than the toddler and preschool age. So I think what we would have paid for an infant, which is what he would have been considered under 2 years old in daycare at the time, was comparable to what we were paying for our au pair. Maybe a little bit more when you consider groceries and, you know, car usage and things like that. But I think just that extra layer of security and not having to stress about relying on someone to be responsible and organized was worth it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. I always tell people who don't have children, the absolute most stressful thing about having children is the childcare, for sure. Children are constantly sick when they won't take them at daycare if they're sick. So what are you going to do? And you have to work late oftentimes, or you have to be, especially in the OR, we have to be there early. And my husband is a surgeon, so we're both having to be there early. It's kind of crazy. Like, I feel like every day it was one day at a time, like, all right, who's it going to be today? Like, who's picking up who? Who's doing what? You know?
Yeah, kids definitely bring a lot of surprises, like stressful. You said, sicknesses, but also snow days and, you know, bad weather days. So that just, again, having someone there that lived with us made CRNA school much, much more tolerable.
Yeah, that's a great idea, actually. I never even thought to, I hear people, like, you know, and at work having one, but I never thought to recommend one for when you're in graduate school. So that's a good idea. So anyone that's listening, definitely look into that. So speaking of your spouse, you had talked about your husband traveling for work, and we talked a little bit about your support system, how your extended family lived in Maryland, you lived in Philadelphia. What kind of support system did you have while you were in school? And how was it with your spouse? What was that dynamic like? Like, can you tell about that support system?
My spouse, as I said, he traveled during the week for work. So that was a challenge. But I think one of my major support systems was my au pair. We had a great relationship. And she was definitely someone I leaned on for help. She was very flexible. You know, if something came up or I decided I needed to study more, she was always there to support me. On the weekends when my spouse was home, we just had clear boundaries. Hey, I'm going to study in the morning, and then we'll do something fun in the afternoon. And he was great at respecting those boundaries and making sure that my son didn't come, kind of like you touched on, come into the room while we're studying. And it just kind of breaks up your focus, and you have to refocus your attention on what you were studying. So it's very important to set those boundaries. And I was fortunate that my spouse was great at respecting those. I think my family was also a big support system for me. Since we moved to Delaware, we were only about an hour away from them. So at least once or twice a month, my mom would drive up and just stay in Delaware with us for the weekend. And she would help me with my son. She would take him out of the house to go play. We would have a nice dinner. So it helped relieve or alleviate some of that childcare stress, but also gave us some family time when I wasn't studying. And then on the weekends that she didn't come, you know, I might go home and stay with my family for the weekend. And again, that would give me another childcare break. But also I would feel just less stressed that my son was having fun with, you know, his family and his cousins. And I was able to study much more effectively at home.
Did you and your partner have any dedicated time together during the week? How did that work out? Like, it just all sounds like madness, right? You're like, you have a child, you have school, and then
it's funny,
what about your relationship?
A joke, and I feel like among many CRNAs, that if your marriage can survive SRN or CRNA school, then it can survive anything. But I'm trying to remember back, and there certainly wasn't a lot of time for the two of us. And looking back, if I had to do it again, I probably would have prioritized that time more. But I think having young kids and just trying to get through CRNA school in general, it didn't leave for much time. Or maybe I just didn't place enough emphasis on that. I don't know what your experience has been in the PhD program.
Well, pre-child, my husband and I were very good about having like a set night each week that we had date night, which was great pre-child. But when you have children and you're in a PhD program and your husband's a surgeon, like, same thing, that kind of is the first thing to go out the window, right? I remember when I first had my son, my pediatrician said to us, when your kids are out of the house, what's going to be left? That was like our first visit. And I was like, wait, I thought we were talking about the baby. But, you know, and it still sticks to me to this day. It's like, yeah, you can give 100% of your focus on the children, but if you don't still like work on your relationship, like what's going to be left? So, you know, I'm not going to lie and say that we've done great in that department. We certainly, like I said, it's the first thing to go, right? It's like your self-care and your relationship priorities. But I feel like, you know, we go through seasons of busy, 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 and seasons of like not as busy. And when we're in a season of a little bit more of a rest or a breather, my husband has been taking off Thursday afternoons a couple times a month, and we'll reserve that time to spend some time together while the kids are still in school. So that's been good. It doesn't happen all the time, but every now and then we'll try to carve out a little bit of time. My kids are a little bit older too, so we feel comfortable leaving them at home for about an hour or so and right. going up the road and getting some sushi, just him and I. So we're starting to like explore that a little bit more too. So it's
no, I think it's great. It's a work in progress for sure. Comfort, you know, the level of comfort leaving small kids with a nanny. So I think that's another thing that people struggle with, and sometimes they will choose not spending time with their significant other over the discomfort of leaving the young child with somebody who's unfamiliar or doesn't see them very often. So again, another reason why having an au pair is great, because they're flexible and they already know the child. So I think it's great that you carve out time for you guys to spend time together. I think it should be as important as, like you said, scheduling that time for your kids every day to where they just have mommy time.
Yeah. Yeah. It actually makes it easier for him and I to kind of be like ships passing in the night if we know that later on in the week we have some time set out for just, and it doesn't have to be a lot of time. It could literally even just be for like 2 hours one day a week. But just knowing that that time is there, it's okay if we are not, you know, communicating a lot during the week or seeing each other a lot during the week. So that has helped. And I always tell people too, I think what has helped me be really successful in my program is that my spouse is not afraid to do more than 50% of his share of housework and does not complain about it at all. So if you haven't settled on a partner yet, it's definitely super important. You know, his job prior to going into medicine, he was a chef. So dinner's not a problem at all. Like he will whip up a dinner real fast and it's good and edible. We do this thing where I take care of the kids in the morning. He takes care of the kids in the afternoon. You have to have this like honest conversation with everyone at the beginning of the program, right? Like, hey, things are going to be a little bit different, right? We're going to be on a budget. You won't see me as much. And having a spouse that is on board with all of that is key. Like they have to be just as into your goals as you are.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's probably one of the most important things going into CRNA school is just setting those clear expectations and boundaries. And it just will, I think it'll make the program much more doable and less stressful when, you know, everybody going in knows what to expect and it's not a surprise when it happens.
Yeah. We don't have parents in our area to help, or some of our parents have passed away. So, and Dave and I are actually, you can relate to this maybe not, but people think that I'm an extrovert and I am not. I am an introvert. And, you know, when we are at home, we don't make going out and making friends is not the first thing on like the, you know, top of the priority list for us. But we definitely recognize that if you don't have parents around to be your support system and you just have each other, like that's hard. And building a community around you is super important. So we, over the years, have focused more on that and trying to come out of our introvert shell. And we don't have a lot of time, but every now and then we'll try to volunteer for things like the Parent Teacher Association or HSA, just so we can meet other people and meet people that, you know, our kids go to school with. That has helped tremendously because we have made some really, really close friends through that. And if we're ever in a pinch, we're like, hey, my kid needs to be picked up or I'm not going to be there on time for da da da, whatever. Our friends that we've, you know, made through this community will step up and help us out. So definitely don't be.
No, I agree.
Don't be shy.
We have a great community that we are surrounded by. My neighbor has me listed as her emergency contact if something were to ever happen. So it's definitely nice to have people close by that you can rely on. Certainly if you're considering going back to graduate school. And that's definitely a question I get from a lot of nurses. You know, nobody wants to move back in with your parents, but if that's what you need to do to save money or, you know, have a support system for your children, then I say do it. It's, again, this is all short term. Mm-hmm. And when you graduate, you're going to have a nice life as a CRNA.
So. You, in school, you thrived in school. You were, you know, you were a state representative. You did really, really well in school. We talked a little bit about time management and being efficient. Are there any other tips that you would give for people? And I know not everybody listening to this would be like, look, I'm happy if I just pass. I'm not concerned about getting a 4.0, right? But, you know, and I get that. It is totally fine. And you'll make the same salary as everybody else. It's not going to make any difference. But, you know, for maybe somebody that might be curious as to how you were able to maintain such a high level of productivity, any tips that you
Yeah, I mean, I think I was definitely motivated by, you know, getting good grades. But as you said, not everybody functions that way, and that's fine. But I think most importantly, you have to have good time management skills and good study habits. So for example, after clinical, I might set the goal that, you know, we use APEX as our study program. And after clinical, I might say that, hey, today I'm going to go through the first tutorial of the first unit, and that's my goal for today. And tomorrow it will be the second tutorial of the first unit. And I think just making clear, objective goals for yourself each day that aren't too big to accomplish just makes everything more doable and much more manageable.
I think people also have not quite figured out how to study, like they're still learning how to learn. You know, and if you don't come in knowing how to learn the material and having good study habits, that's an additional hurdle that you have to overcome. People also really overestimate their ability to accomplish a certain amount in a certain time period. I notice people like will have like this like to-do list of like 20 things they're going to do that day. I'm like, yeah, pick three, maybe, you know, you're most. And so like you had said, choosing or picking goals that were tangible and that you could accomplish, that you knew you were going to accomplish in that time period. Like being realistic, I guess.
Is the most important thing when it comes to studying, because if you, like you said, have just this long list of goals and things to do, that it just becomes so overwhelming that, you know, you can't accomplish it. So I think, again, just setting small, realistic goals each day and not procrastinating. Don't wait until Friday to cram for an exam. Start Monday and do small portions of the content so that by the time the weekend comes, it doesn't all feel so massive.
I'm actually writing my dissertation now, even though I'm not defending until probably April, May. And at the time of this recording, it's September. Now, most people don't write their dissertation, their doctorate dissertation, until a couple months. And they'll go very like monk mode, you know, monastery mode, and just lock themselves away and write for 16 hours a day for 3 months straight. So when I told people that I started my dissertation already this summer, now the only person with children, right? People thought I was, people told me I was crazy, but I'm like, you don't understand. Right. I can't lock myself away for 16 hours a day for 3 months straight. Right. That's not an option for me. Right. So it makes sense for me to start in the summertime, 9 months before I defend, because then I could work on it a couple hours each week and I'm not super stressed about it leading up to it. It's just something that you have to, like you said, discipline, but you have to be realistic that it's like, my life is different.
Yeah. And I think, like you said, people are very different in their study habits. I'm certainly the type of person that gets the syllabus at the beginning of the quarter or the semester. And I will try to do everything that I can as early as possible. But I think, again, it comes down, you know, specifically to this podcast, people with kids, you don't really have that choice. Like you said, you have to prioritize your time. And if that means doing small bits each day or each week to achieve a goal, then I think that's much more doable and less stressful than waiting and procrastinating until the week before it's due.
So we've talked a lot about our family, our kids, our spouses, our support systems, but what about us? How do we maintain our sanity and carve out time for ourselves? And, or does that happen? You know,
it definitely happens.
What's your take on that?
It requires good, as we talked about, good time management skills and lots of discipline. But yes, it happens. I was very fortunate that we had a very tight-knit group and we got together pretty often. So, you know, after exams, it was pretty common that we went to Sabrina's Cafe for brunch. And, you know, like I said, we had a lot of people that were pregnant during the program. So we always had baby showers or group gatherings on the weekends. So that definitely made the program much more enjoyable. And I didn't always go. You know, I tried to make compromises. You know, 50% of the time I might go spend time with them. But if we got out early because of an exam, I might try to head home and spend that extra time with my son. So definitely try to make time for yourself during the program. But as a parent, you're going to have to make those compromises. And that's totally fine. It's just a balance. I enjoy running.
Activity.
That's something I did a lot during the program. Putting on some music and going out for a nice run. It definitely helped release some of that stress from studying all day or being in clinical. And what's something that you like to do?
Oh, lately, I would say my favorite thing to do during the program now has been to go get reflexology. There's this like reflexology place that is down the road from my house. And if I could go every week and afford it, I totally would. So I love doing that. I love to read for pleasure. And I feel like I don't get enough of those opportunities to do that because I feel guilty for then not reading for science. So that has been challenging. I have been learning a little bit more about the benefits of meditation, especially trying to learn techniques for meditation for people that are extremely busy and driven. We just can't turn our minds off. So learning techniques that somebody like me could use rather than, you know what I'm trying to say? Like, I just can't turn my mind off. So how do I learn how to refresh my brain using a little bit different techniques? So those are kind of the things that I like to do. When I was in CRNA school, I was very much into fitness. I played sports in college. So I maintained that and did a lot of CrossFit. I find that now with having children and being in a demanding career, fitness hasn't been as big a priority in my life as it once was. And I think my body is paying the toll for it, for sure. So I'm lately have been focused a little bit more on how do I incorporate
I that
back into my
great.
Life.
That's
again.
Why I love running, because it's a nice, quick exercise, but effective. And I can listen to music or audiobooks is a recent thing that I took up. I remember after I graduated reading my first book, like you were talking about. And I was like, wow, this is the first book I've read in 3 years that didn't deal with anesthesia or science. So I think, like you said, just carving out that time each day, setting the expectation that during these hours, it's going to be my fitness time or my me time. I think it's just so important to get through graduate school successfully.
Speaking of audiobooks, like I have a pretty long commute to work. I commute about an hour to get to my lab. I was talking to my husband about this, but one thing that we've been doing lately is making a list of YouTube videos about totally random topics that have nothing to do with what you're studying. And it's fun because you can learn something it's very stress relieving. So I listened to some YouTube videos on the way to work the other day about the different Chinese languages and Mandarin Chinese. It's so random, but it was entertaining. And I actually had
someone recently,
stressed.
I'm trying to find it now. They recommended a podcast and it was just, like you said, about nothing important or anything related to anesthesia, but it was just to take your mind off of life and the stressors that come with that. So.
Right. Absolutely. So as far as people who want to get pregnant in graduate school, or maybe you've started as graduate school, you're listening to this right now. Maybe you just found out you're pregnant. It was not planned. You know, some general advice I would say for people in that phase of the program. First thing I would say is definitely communicate with your mentors and your faculty as soon as possible. This is not something that you're going to be able to hide, right? This is not like your teenage pregnancy with your parents and trying to stave it off as long as possible. You want to create a plan with them as soon as possible. as far as your study plan, taking time off, and also with your clinical site. They are going to be the liaison between you and your clinical site, and you want them to be able to help you create that plan and work with the clinical site for you to take time off. So I'd say first things first, definitely communicate with your faculty. If you aren't in school yet, and I think we had mentioned this already, and you are thinking that you want to start some family planning while you're in graduate school, definitely bring this up during the interview. Now, legally, they are not allowed to deny you entry if you are discussing anything related to family planning, right? Now, I know that that's legally, and maybe realistically, there might be some bias placed against you for inquiring about that. And I would say, is that really a program that you want to go to? If they are going to bias against you for thinking about family planning during graduate school, right? It doesn't sound like a very supportive program. And I know people out there are listening and thinking, well, that's the only program that I got an interview to. And I get that, right? Everybody's situation is different and you have to balance that, but you want to be in the most supportive program as possible. So I would even argue that if that's the only place that you got an interview to, keep interviewing, because that's a long time to be in a program that's not going to support you and your goals.
Yeah, I agree.
And your family.
I think if you find yourself in a position where you are pregnant and you're in school or you're thinking about it, I think most importantly, just reminding yourself that you can still do it. Don't let this deter you from applying or continuing in the program. We certainly had classmates in my cohort that did it. I think like Rhea talked about, just first communicating with your faculty, but also the clinical site. I think that's definitely a big stress for people that get pregnant, is what kind of assignments or cases they may be doing. Does it involve fluoroscopy or x-ray? So I think most importantly, talking to your faculty and your clinical team, just so that everybody is aware. And then again, planning for your time off and how you're going to make up that time, so you can relieve all the stressors that you may be concerned about during this time.
It is certainly not the end of the world if you have to stay past when everybody else graduates to make up clinical time. It really isn't. It's sometimes, you know, 1 or 2 months. Sometimes you might not have to at all. Like at Drexel's program, like people were given off, what, about 1 to 2 months before you graduated to study
for
boards?
We had 1 month, right? Off.
Yeah. So people took that time sometimes to make up clinical time and might have delayed taking their boards a couple weeks so that they could then graduate and spend time studying. And that's, you'll be okay. Everything's going to be fine.
You know, each program, as far as I know, dedicates personal days for each student. So that's going to depend on what program you go to. But I know for the Hopkins programs, the students get, I believe it's 25 personal days. So, you know, if you're planning to get pregnant or you are pregnant, maybe instead of using those personal days for a vacation day, maybe saving that time for time off for maternity leave so that you're not making up that time, or you're not making up as much time at the end of the program.
Yeah. When I had my first child, I wasn't at my job for the full year yet. So I couldn't do FMLA. And so I took off 8 weeks with him. And I certainly wish I had more time off, but it was fine. And I went back to work. And then my second child, I had, you know, upwards of 5 months off because I took the baby bonding time. So I think you also need to have that expectation that like when you take time off, it's likely not going to be that full like 5 months, right? I don't know if the program would be able to be that flexible with you, but they certainly will give you the, you know, 8 weeks off to do what you need to do with your baby and get your baby settled before going back to clinical. So I think just also managing your own expectations of like what that looks like. It's probably not going to be the same as if you were working, right? It's going to be a little bit different.
And I had the same experience. As you said, I was pregnant during CRNA school. So when I started my first job, I hadn't been there for a full year to enjoy the benefits of maternity leave or FMLA. So like you said, kind of setting the expectations for yourself that, you know, it may not look like exactly what you want it to look like, but ultimately you're going to have the time that you need to spend with your baby and get them settled before you have to go back and be a student again or be a clinician.
Awesome. So as we wrap up this episode, any last minute words of advice for people that are in graduate school or thinking about going to graduate school and are a parent or thinking about parent?
I think most importantly, the best piece of advice I can give you is just to take the first step, whether that is submitting an application for CRNA school or, you know, maybe that involves you switching to an ICU so that you are a good candidate for CRNA school. I think a lot of people shy away from just taking that first step. They think, I have kids, I can't do this, or I don't want to make the transition to an ICU. So I encourage everyone just to take that first step and trust the process. But after you take that first step, I think, like we talked about on this episode, just second most importantly, setting clear expectations and boundaries with your family, with your spouse, with your children, if they're old enough to understand, so that you can make CRNA school as successful and to make it as smooth a journey as possible. And again, finding reliable childcare, someone that you trust to be at your house on time, that you can rely on every day so that you can be at clinical. And I think lastly, like we've talked about, it's going to take good time management skills, emotional intelligence, and effective study habits. But if you can do well in all of these areas, you're not going to have to choose between your kids and your family and doing well in school. Having kids during school certainly makes it more difficult, but it's possible, and you won't have to compromise your spot in the class or compromise graduating because you have a family. While family certainly demands a lot of your time, mm-hmm. It's not impossible to do CRNA school well with kids.
If you could do something differently, is there anything that you would change about your experience?
Overall, I had a great experience, but if I had to change one thing, I may have chosen a program closer to home. Even if it meant waiting an extra year to start the program, it would have been easier to do a program that was close to my family, my support system, or maybe I could have lived with family and not had that financial burden of renting a place in another state, and also having that childcare from my family versus relying on an au pair or a daycare if that's the situation you're in. But overall, I had a good experience. And I think no matter what you decide to do, there are resources and there are certainly people you can talk to get advice to help you through these big decisions and challenges.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for all of your advice. It was so nice chatting with you. You are definitely superhuman, I think, but also, you know, you've done very, very well in your career. You've done very well in school. And I remember meeting you and I did not even know that you had children. I was so impressed and so shocked that you just had it all together. So I'm really happy for you. And I know that people listening to this episode will get a lot from the advice.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate you thinking about me for this episode.